You guys got these, right? Well, let me tell you the rest of the story, okay? Everybody loves that first part, and that's what I do. When I check into hotels, when I sit on airplanes, when I can get a conversation with the person next to me, or the waiter or the waitress is like, hey, I've got this free gift for you from the Philippines. Can I give it to you? And then I tie it on them, and I tell them about that village and how lives were totally transformed, right? But then there's the rest of the story. And the younger generation doesn't have a clue to that reference. I mean, come on. Paul Harvey was like the best storyteller ever, right? And so rest of the story is this. It's like, you know, everybody thinks, man, if they were rich, that gold, oh, if they were rich, they'd be so happy. Well, my dad made $250,000 a year wrestling in the 60s. A lot of money back then. He died living in a $3,000 trailer, taking tolls at a toll booth, and he couldn't pay for that trailer. So if you think selling out for what the world can give you will make you happy, the world can take it away. Money can go away very quickly, but that represents heaven, and that can never be taken away from us. The only problem is we can't get there because what? We've all sinned. We've all fallen short of the glory of God. So what a sad story. You got this beautiful place that you can't get to, but it's not sad, is it? Because God became a man. His name was Jesus. And he came and he died. He shed his blood on a cross for us while we were rejecting him. He died for us. And it says that whoever trusts in him, guess what? He washes us white like snow. He gives us new hearts, new minds. We're a new creation. I don't care what you've done. And by the way, I now have to include this with everybody. I don't care what's been done to you. Because the culture that we live in is pretty ugly. Don't care what you've done. Don't care what's been done to you. That doesn't define who you are. What defines who you are is what he did for you. And then that green, oh man, I look outside, you've still got some green leaves. Well, those green leaves are alive. They're growing. That's a reminder to me that I need to be alive and growing in my faith. You can now share the gospel in 90 seconds. People love the first part. And because of that, it's always a perfect setup to give them the part that really matters. Because we can do all the great stuff. We can clean, we can feed, we can clothe, we can build homes, and we can do all those wonderful things. But if we never get to the preaching of the gospel, it's worthless. I love apologetics. Don't get me wrong. We're going to do an apologetic talk right now. But if the apologetic doesn't lead to the preaching of Jesus, it really, in the end, is not going to be worth anything. So, I've tied this on their wrist. I've shared the gospel with them. And then I'll do to them, or I'll do to you what I do to them. It's not free. What do you think happens when I do that? What kind of look you think I get from the people? Oh, man. I thought this guy was, like, nice, and now he's trying to hit me up. And I'll say, you can see the look. They're like, ugh. Then I'm like, you want to ask me a question? Would any of you like to ask me a question? How much? That's not the question, because I don't want your money. Here's the way that it works. Ready? Ready? If you're going to wear one, you need to take another one and share it. Because if you wear one, you share one. Because guys, we have a message of hope. And the fact that we're hiding in this culture is ridiculous. You really want to have hope? There's only one thing. His name is Jesus. So if you're going to wear one, you take another one to share that with somebody. Okay? That's the way that it works. I told you I was going to tell you a little bit about our evangelistic outreach, what we do. We just got done 2 months ago. We did, I call it Detour. We have that 68 Volkswagen bus. Kill these lights. We have that 68 Volkswagen bus, and we take it out, and we just put it out on the street, and people come. And it's really, it's the people that, trust me, it's the people that you want to come for the most part. And so this was our team. We took four 20-year-olds. Wade's our CEO. We took these one, two, three, four, those four 20-year-olds. And it was a training time. Because what we do is we go into a church. I say, hey, guys, we're doing a road trip. Every day we're in a different place. We're going to come into town. Bring your people that want to get trained to go out and to do street evangelism. We'll come in. We're going to train you. Then we're going to go out. We're going to do it. Then we'll debrief. And then we're on the road to the next place. And so the four 20-year-olds, this is my discipleship time right here. We get these guys, we train them, and they're the ones that are kind of leading it. Me, I like being in the background. I'm like there in case something comes up and we need a hand. So this is the bus, and I'm telling you, when we pop the back up, people come out and just start talking. These are the two young ladies. Please pray for them. She's in college right now. When we finished our trip, we finished it on a Sunday in Lebanon, Ohio at Urban Crest. You guys might be familiar with that church. We finished up there on Sunday morning. She had to go catch a flight immediately after that. She went to Washington, D.C. She now works for Shannon Bream from Fox News. She runs her whole schedule. Amazing young lady. Amazing young lady. And so she's on the road with us, you know, doing this stuff. And that's, we're trying to reach people that are going to be out there. Here's one of the young men in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We're just out in the parks talking and sharing. This is up in Lebanon, Ohio, the last day. Bill Jack was with us on this. Dan, I didn't introduce Dan to you guys the first session. I got all flustered. Dan is part of the team, man, and he is an amazing part of the team. If any of you are familiar with Answers in Genesis and you've ever read any of their publications, you've seen his work. Dan's the artist that did After Eden and Creation-Wise, and there's a couple other things. And if you've ever seen, like, even like in the Ken's presentations, a lot of the artwork, Dan's a guy that really did it. Dan works with me now, and he's just a huge blessing to have. Just one of the most amazing gifts in being able to take concepts and turn them into visuals. That is a real gift. So Dan was up there with us on this one, and that was downtown Lebanon. It was really neat. I think my highlight had to be in Lawrenceville, Georgia, just north of Atlanta, Georgia. We'd gone out to the park. We'd just shared and everything. We had a father who had his two children and his wife with him. He received the Lord in the park there. It was awesome. We finished up. We'd done our debrief. And it was getting dark, so our guy was going to take a picture of the whole group around the bus and everything. And I'm standing there talking to one of the guys. And the photographer guy calls me. He says, Carl, come here. I came over, and he said, man, I'm trying to get set up to take this picture. And these folks want to know what we're about. Would you talk to them? I'm like, yeah. So I went over to this young couple, and what is this? So I tell them, we share the gospel with them. I give my this is my ministry. I give the gospel wristband. But when I'm out on the street doing this, when I get to the white before I get to the green, it's like, you know, trust in Jesus. And, you know, and I was like, have you ever done that? It's like, well, no. And then I explain why you need to do that. And I use a simple thing like, I don't have my handkerchief with me, but, you know, when we're created perfect. But then guess what? We all sinned. And God said, we've all sinned. We've all fallen short of the glory of God. Nothing we can do about it. So then I take my handkerchief out and I cover it up. And it's like, see, that's what most of us try to do. We've sinned, so we try to cover it up. And it looks pretty good, but then you lift it up and it's still there. And it's kind of like putting frosting on a burnt cake. It might look good on the outside, but on the inside, pretty nasty, right? How do you get rid of it? Well, you don't, but God can. You know? So I use that little simple illustration, go through that. And both of them received the Lord. And so these were the two, man. Please pray for these. Pray for these young folks. Anna and Carlos were the names. Pray for those two, because fortunately, when we go out, we do this. We have a church, a local church, that then we plug them into, because without the local church, it's never going to go anywhere. So that's what we do. Next year, we're going to do another bus trip. We'll start in Chicago, I think, and we're going to head out to Des Moines, Iowa. But this is, I was looking up there, I was like, I'm not getting it up there now. Oh, because I'm coming through this. This is, to me, this is a fun talk. I really believe this. I love apologetics, and I love keeping it to where it hopefully makes sense. So I call this the ultimate battle. God versus nothing. Now you're sitting here thinking, what? Hopefully you'll understand what I mean as we get into this. There's a museum out in Colorado that I found this sign and I thought it was really good. Let me share this with you. Science without physical evidence is opinion. And opinion is not science, even if it's the opinion of a scientist. Now think of this. This is like money, man. This is from a secular museum here. Okay, let me read it to you again. Science without physical evidence is... That was lame. And opinion is not... Science. Even if it's the opinion of a scientist. This is really good, guys. Now, I want you to hang on to that, because we're now going to... And may I just warn you in advance, it's about to get some sarcasm, okay? And there's a reason. You've just eaten. And so most of the time after you eat, what are you going to want to do? So I'm going to be using the sarcasm meter. It's going up, all right? But just be aware that when I'm talking with lost people, that is not what I do. People are going to spend eternity in one of two places. And so mocking and ridicule is not my modus operandi. But when I'm here trying to keep you awake, I am going to turn it up a little bit, okay? Hebrews 11:3 says, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God. Now, we're going to hear this all the time. See, Christian, that's all you've got is faith. Have you ever heard that claim? All Christians have is faith. Well, what's faith? Non-Christian says faith is a firm belief in something for which there is no evidence. Is that biblical faith? And that is not biblical faith. Biblical faith is so much more than that, but we live in a time where most of us can't give an answer on what is faith. And faith is something that is so much... Let me show you... Can I show you a short video? I'm going to show it anyway, so play along. Come on. Can I show you a short video?
Yeah.
All right, good. Here we go. Let's deal with biblical faith.
Faith, the final frontier. These are the voyages... No, it's ridiculous, although that's where most people take this topic, to science fiction. Faith. What is it really? A magic feeling that we get to help us through tough times? A mystical bridge between fact and fiction? Is it really blind? Is it a word we use when we can't explain ourselves? Is it real on any level? Let's investigate. Hypothetical. A person says to you, I sure do wish I could believe in Millibuggins like you do, I just don't have that kind of faith. Well, what that person is really saying is that Millibuggins aren't real, and you are the type of person who believes in unreal things, and it takes this strange faith thing that not many other people have for you to get there. Okay, in the nicest way possible then, this person is calling you insane, or at best just a little nutty. So you have this odd capability of believing in something you desperately wish to be true, but you just can't be sure if it is. However, since it makes you feel better, it's worth it. For you. Well, that pretty much sums up what faith means to most people. In other words, the stronger your faith, the more ridiculous the belief must be, because after all, a little faith helps you believe in things that probably aren't true, so then a really powerful faith will be the kind of faith you absolutely know something isn't true, but you still believe it anyway. Thus, faith is reduced to some blind anecdotal act that magically suspends disbelief of reality in order to make you feel better. But, you gotta wonder, is this really the kind of faith the Bible talks about? Let's look at the word again, okay? Let's refocus. The Bible refers to faith really in only one way. It's like this. Suppose I say, I have faith that my friend will repay me the 10 bucks he owes me on Saturday because he said he would. See, there's nothing strange about that faith, and nobody would fault me for having it if they knew my friend. Because what I'm saying essentially are three things. One, my friend is real. Two, he's trustworthy. And three, which is really a subset of two, I believe one and two because I have a relationship with my friend. Now, for just a second, let's get morbid to make a critical illustration. What if my friend died on the way to give me my 10 bucks back? He didn't come through. No matter how much faith I had in him, how real and completely trustworthy he may have been, he didn't have the power to live up to my faith. Was he really any less trustworthy or any less real? No. But the person or object on which I place my faith is an essential part of how strong my faith should be. I mean, how much faith do you have that your 2-year-old basset hound can drive your new Lexus to the bank and bring you back $1,000 in 20s? None, I hope. But now, turn that analogy of my friend and your dog toward God, who is all-powerful, all-knowing, eternal, and incapable of lying, and ask yourself this. On whom does it make the most sense to place your greatest faith? Well, I'll tell you. Anyone who has a right relationship with God, and quite honestly, anyone who doesn't, knows he is the only one capable of doing everything he says, the only one with the knowledge of the future, the only one who understands everything, the only one who really knows you, and the only one who has revealed through nature and his word who he is and what he's done, how much he loves you, and why he is the only completely trustworthy one there is. Got it? Good. In summary, then, faith in God is always a response to truth and reality and has nothing to do with blind leaps, the USS Enterprise, or wishful thinking. Trust me.
So biblical faith is based in this has happened, this has happened, this has happened, so therefore it's not blind. It's based in what has already occurred. It's solid. So fill in the blank for me. In the beginning, excuse me? Okay. So I'm with a bunch of fundamentalist Christian hicks again. That's one of those things. You know there's two ways to fill that blank in. In the beginning, God, or in the beginning, most people would say gas. Tiny thing, smaller than a pinhead, explodes and turns into everything that we see. Big bang, hydrogen gas transforms itself. That's what most people would say. And the people that would say that would say, but you, Carl, somebody created, you got God that created everything? And who created God? Anybody? Anybody? Ever had that one happen to you? Oh, go to the college campus. I'm telling you, one of the top ones. You know why? Because a guy named Richard Dawkins, he wrote a book called The God Delusion. And the entire book, this thick, can be summarized with, if God created everything, then who created God? So it's been around for a long time. So I'll ask you a question. Would you like me to answer that question for you? I can skip it if you like. Would you like an answer to that? Okay, well, this is a debunked video, so you're going to have to put your seatbelts on again. You ready? We're after lunch. I got to do this. Boom, boom, boom. Keep you all going. You ready? All right, here we go.
You know, people misunderstand all kinds of things about the nature of God, which leads them to say interesting things like, if everything that begins needs a beginner, then so does God. Or, hey man, if every effect has to have a cause, then God has to have a cause. Or even, if God created everything, then something or someone had to create God. There it is, a boom, mic drop. No mic drop, pick it up, because those statements don't merit such a thing. And here's why. Basically, we got three French hens. Two hurl above the far ridge as I tear free. What? Yep, shoot them down nice and easy. One ultimate question, kind of spun as three. Bumbled briefly by Bub, because brevity bespeaks benevolence, benefiting belabored beholders. And pull! Statement et une, as no one from France would say, but I ain't French. If everything that begins needs a beginner, then so does God. And that would be a great point if God began, but the statement says everything that begins needs a beginner, not that everything needs a beginner. God didn't have a beginning, so he doesn't need a beginner. He is, as the Bible declares, eternal and everlasting. On to el statementavo de doso, which probably doesn't mean what I think it should. If every effect has a cause, then God has to have a cause. Well, again, that would be a good point if God was the effect of something, but he wasn't, because nothing caused God. He's the uncaused cause who causes all other causes. This means he's the only necessary, uncreated anything. All other things are created and contingent, therefore in need of said cause. And so we're here at La Statementanto de Finale, as once spoken by nobody from Italy or anywhere else, I imagine. If God created everything, then somebody or something had to create God. Well, that doesn't really follow because, again, God is eternal and unmade. Sorry to be repetitive, but nobody or no thing created God. And he certainly didn't create himself because that would be, well, absurd. He is the one who created all things. Colossians 1:16 puts it this way. By him, all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. And we all actually know this just by looking around at things. That's why Romans 1:19 and 20 says, for what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. This means if you pondered the world and the universe, you'd come to the common sense conclusion, at least at minimum, an immaterial, powerful, personal, intelligent, spaceless, and timeless being created the universe. Whoa, now hold on a cotton-picking minute. Why would I come to that conclusion, you might ask with fervor? Well, because we know the universe began to exist, and that means it had a cause. So then, what caused it? Well, you got three choices, really. You got nothing, you got an abstract, or you got a being with the aforementioned qualities. Unprovable multiverses or crystals on the backs of turtles won't do. Now, it seems to me that Billy Preston dismantles the first option when he's saying, nothing from nothing, leave nothing. Yeah, no, don't quit the day job, but what he spins is true, my brothers and sisters. You get nada from nothing because nothing is, as Aristotle asserted, the thing rocks dream of. So what about an abstract something? Say like the number four. Well, last I checked, the number four can't talk, can't eat, can't think, can't do much of anything. So that leaves us with the being with the same characteristics described in the Bible that we'd expect if we never read the Bible, and that being is God. The creator and sustainer of the universe. He was not made, he was not caused, he was not created. He had no beginning, he had no end, he had no superior, he has no equal, he has no boundaries, he has no limits, he has no weakness, he's infinite, he's eternal, he's all-powerful, he's the Alpha and Omega, he's all-knowing, he's spaceless, he's timeless, he's spirit, and unlike Visa, he's everywhere. Period. Might be nice to drop that mic now. And there it is. This unfounded claim that God needs a beginner or a cause, or that somebody made God, has been, as it were, hitherto and henceforth, debunked. Adios.
So, again, too much information, too fast. Remember, if you want them before we release them, all you have to do is text that adios space. Hope BC to 51555. And then another way that you can get them, I forgot to tell you about this. I've got cards out on the table there, has free app. If you've got your smartphone, go ahead, pull it out again. Just go to your app store and type in Reasons for Hope and look for the blue asterisk, download it. The app is totally free. And it is the best tool, quite frankly, the best tool that I can put in your hand because it's all geared for somebody that's out talking to somebody and somebody makes a statement. Well, if I got to go on and look on YouTube and try and find it, forget about it, right? Well, the app has got them all. All the debunked videos in one category. 2-minute teachings in another category. Dan's videos, because Dan does homeschool parents, parents with younger children. He does a great art class, okay? Like that Fast Facts book that's out there. Imagine now having your child sit down and learn how to draw an octopus, to draw my what was the one my grandson did? Yeah, he did the cheetah, and he entered it in an art contest. Came in third. But all these different kind of animal features, and Dan does that, you know, and but teaches biblical about them. And that's all free, too. Those are all on that app. It's on our Facebook page as well. So you can download the app. Again, it's free of charge. Take some cards. Share the information. We just want to put tools in people's hands. So take advantage of it. So what's the truth? God versus gas, right? Nope. That is not the ultimate battle. The ultimate battle is actually God versus nothing. Stick with me. We need to know the evolutionary model better than the world. We have nothing to be afraid of. We really don't. When you know the evolutionary model, it actually becomes your best friend. You're like, really? That's all they got? Yeah. We don't need to be afraid of it. So what does it actually teach? It teaches that in the beginning, nothing turned into something to turn into everything. And if you think I'm joking, let me take you to the smart guys that teach it. Alexander Vilenkin.
There is one answer that appears to avoid this problem. The idea is that the universe could be spontaneously created out of nothing.
So there you go. You start with nothing, you get something. The universe is created spontaneously out of nothing. And if you think he's like the weird stranger guy, let me take you to another one. Peter Atkins, take a listen.
And it may be that our universe happens to be that happy chance of nothing transforming itself into what seems to be something that seems to persist.
You know, what I found is that if you've got like a really cool accent, you can get away with a whole lot. Because this sounds so good, man. It's like, dude, I wish I had that accent. Well, it may be that our universe happens to be that happy chance out of nothing transforming us over into what seems to be something. So there's the battle. The battle lines are drawn. God versus nothing. Let's deal with it. I'm just straightforward. In order to do this, though, we need to define nothing because we can use the same words and have different meanings, right? Remember from the debunked video, how did Aristotle define nothing? Anybody catch that? What rocks dream about, right? But he didn't have a PhD, and so I want PhDs to talk to us today. So I have a PhD, theoretical physicist, Dr. Michio Kaku, and let's let him define nothing.
Floyd doesn't believe he can actually get his taxes done for nothing. So we brought in Dr. Michio Kaku to explain exactly what we mean by nothing.
Nothing is the absence of something. Zero is absolutely nothing.
So it costs nothing?
Well, it costs you zero, which is nothing.
Okay. All right.
Okay, are we all in agreement now? Do we know what nothing is?
Yes, sir.
All right. By the way, I love this. It doesn't take a genius to do your taxes. I'm going to go out on a limb here. It doesn't take a genius to figure out you can't get something from nothing, okay? But anyway, let's let them defend their position. Because this is something that I started doing a long time ago. When I'm always looking for where are the holes in my arguments. How could somebody attack? How would I attack me? You know what I mean? When I put something out there, it's like, okay, here's where I would attack it. I've always been like that once I got saved. It's like, okay, what are the weaknesses? How do I deal with this? And that sort of a thing. So I started looking at this and was like, well, how would I attack me? Well, Carl, you don't have a PhD in science. Who do you think you are? You don't have a PhD. You're the son of a professional wrestler. You're right. But you know, there's something very interesting that I learned in the home of a professional wrestler. I learned how to smell a fake and a fraud from a block away. You can put on a good show, but I'm telling you, I can see the fake and a fraud. So I said, let me then start using their stuff. Let me use their videos, their charts, their stuff, and then critically evaluate it. So now when they attack me, you don't have a PhD. You're right, but these are your people. These are your charts. This is what they said. How am I wrong in my interpretation? It takes that whole thing out, right? The lack of credentials. How am I wrong? These are your people. This is what they said. So that's what we're going to do. Nothing is the absence of something, according to Dr. Michio Kaku. So now let's introduce the two guys who are going to explain to you and I how you can get something from nothing. Richard Dawkins, which we talked about. He's very antagonistic, doesn't like us very much. And remember his book, The God Delusion. The whole thing can be summarized with, well, if God created everything, then who created God? It truly is the only argument that's in the book. And why would I use him? Because he's kind of like Gru. You know what I mean? Richard Dawkins, he's like Gru. If Gru was using an argument, the Minions are using an argument, okay? And Lawrence Krauss, he's a Minion. He's never going to grow up to be Gru, but he did write a book. And the title of the book was A Universe from Nothing, Why There Is Something Rather Than Nothing. Okay, I need you to use your imagination now. I know it's after lunch or after breakfast, and let's get our imagination going here. I want you to imagine the book has just come out. And we spent $35 to buy a hardcover copy of this book. You with me? I'm not saying that we would do it. Let's just imagine. All right? I forked out $35 to buy this book. Now I find out that Dr. Lawrence Krauss and Richard Dawkins are coming to town. They're going to do a presentation and explain how you can get something from nothing. So now I go buy my $100 ticket to go watch Lawrence and Richard explain to me how we get something from nothing. Are you with me? We're invested in this, right? And now we got to drive across town. If you got children, you got to get a babysitter, okay? We're taking this thing serious. So we pull in, and now I want you, we're going to watch their stuff. Not all together. It's like a two-hour thing. We're just going to watch a bit of it and break it down. Watch, break it down. Watch, break it down. To me, this is how you deal with these things. Teach how to think. We're going to listen to Richard and Lawrence explain to us how we can get something from nothing. Because you fundamentalist Hicks, you believe in a God. How can you believe in God? We got nothing. Get it? I should have got a chuckle, man. Come on, that's good. Here we go. Let's listen.
In the context of evolution, what something from nothing means to you?
Charles Darwin solved one of the greatest riddles that the human mind has ever solved, which is how you get something from nothing in the sense of how you get the immense complexity and diversity and beauty and elegance of life. And perhaps above all, how you get the powerful illusion of design that life shows, starting not quite from nothing, but starting from extreme simplicity.
We got to talk. Now, let me identify some tools that the educated elite love to use against me, okay? There's mic drop moments. You know what a mic drop is, right? You got a mic here I can throw on the ground? No. You don't want me to do that. Done. No response. Walk away. Right? Charles Darwin. Boom. Walk away. He dropped the Charles Darwin bomb. There's no response. Because Charlie D, he's golden, baby. The laws of quantum mechanics. Boom. The laws of physics. Boom. Virtual particles. Boom. Because is there anybody in here who can explain the laws of quantum mechanics to me, please? Forget about it. Don't even try. I wouldn't get it. Boom. So most Christians are like, gosh, must be right. I don't get it. Pick up the mic. Let's talk. This is what he said. Charles Darwin solved how you get something from nothing. I have a very simple question for you. You don't have to get deep. What did Charles Darwin discover? What is he famous for? What's that? Finches. But what did the finches show? Evolution. That's where you better define your terms. Because what do you mean by evolution? Do you mean change over time? Or do you mean new genetic information being added so that you can change over time? Because they're going to use that word. Look, he discovered that there were birds that had big beaks and little beaks. All right? And then based on climatic changes, if there was a drought, the really tender shoots and tender plants wouldn't grow. They would disappear. So what would happen to the population of the little beak birds that needed that food to survive? What would happen to their numbers? They would shrink. Rains came back. Tender plants came back. What would happen to the population? That's all he showed. is that based on climatic changes, you would have shifts in populations. Oh, some turtles, Galapagos turtles, some have in the carapace, their shell in the front is flat because the turtle bends down the neck from the ground to eat, and some of them are horseshoe shaped because on some of the islands, they have to eat things that are up in the air. That proves evolution. It's turtles. They have different shaped carapaces, but they're still turtles. What does that have to do with getting something from nothing? Be honest. Charles Darwin solved how you get something from nothing. No, he didn't. He had absolutely nothing to do with getting something from nothing. Don't trust me. Non-Christian quote here. And he says, the theory of evolution deals with changes in populations. Populations are something. Do we believe as a Christian, as a creationist, do I believe the populations are going to change over time? You better believe it. Because if you take a look at me now, and you look at my wedding picture from 70 pounds ago, I quit counting years, thank you very much. I have changed over time. But I'm still human. The same thing is true with this. He continues on. And given a starting population, changes will occur. Absolutely. No doubt about it. You start with two dogs, you get all the different looking dogs. You start with two cats, you get all the different looking cats. You start with two people. Guys. This has nothing to do with something from nothing. That starting population is an objective fact. We can see it in the fossil record. Yes, you can. The fossil record actually screams that God did what he said that he did, the way that he said that he did it, and it's nothing that we need to be afraid of. Matter of fact, bring some of your leaders with me, that younger generation that you are trying to groom to be the future. Bring them with us next year, Lord willing, if COVID doesn't shut us down again. We dig dinosaur bones. Glendive, Montana, we're in the fields, we're digging the bones. I want you to see for yourself. I want you to see the conditions that they come out. I want you to do it for yourself. Because when you see, it screams, not slow gradual processes, it screams rapid, catastrophic, biblical explanation, okay? The fossils do support the Word of God. But we have a generation that's not been taught how to apply their faith in that realm. Powerful illusion of design the life shows. Now, why would he say that? Why would he call it an illusion that life shows? Have you ever heard the saying that the devil is in the detail? You ever heard that? Not true. God is in the detail. You take anything that God made, look at it under an electron microscope. The further down you go, the more amazing it is. This Speedo copied this to come up with swimsuits so that the swimmers can get faster times. This is a shark skin. It is absolutely designed. That's a snowflake, but the God that we serve, he's not so stuffy that he only makes one. He makes different kinds of snowflakes. And this, the reason you and I can breathe right now, without this, which, oh my goodness, when you start looking at these diatoms, unbelievable the designs, the beauty. They look like little jewels or just unbelievable. Look at a butterfly egg. Butterfly egg under a microscope literally look like gems. They're just so cool. Hay fever, you got hay fever? Thanks to this. Anything that God made under an electron microscope, the further down you get, the more amazing it is. I have pictures of electron microscope pictures of a eye of a mosquito. And the further down you go, the cooler it is. Then let's take a look at something that man made. The finest Swiss gear in a Swiss watch looks like junk. A needle, unused needle. Dude, I don't ever want to get another shot. You look at an unused needle, don't look at a used needle. A used needle after three usages, this front part is literally bent back after three usages. Anything that man made looks like junk. Anything that God made, the further down you get, the more amazing it is. It is no illusion that you see design. And by the way, design requires a designer. And then he said this, you hold me accountable, starting not quite from nothing. Did he not say that? What was the name of the book? A Universe from Not Quite Nothing? He wrote the afterword for the book. He wrote the afterword for the book. Starting not quite from nothing? Hello? We came here to hear how we got something from nothing. I paid $35 for the book. I paid $100 for the ticket. I had to drive across town. I had to find a parking spot. And the first statement out of your mouth is you're telling me that it didn't come from nothing, that it started from not quite nothing? That was him. But what did it start from? Starting from extreme simplicity. When I'm in the classroom with the kids, I love to do this. I'll do it with you guys. We won't go as long as I do in the classroom, but can anybody in here give me an example of extreme simplicity, but you cannot use me as the example? Anything, anything, anything. Yes. The wristband, extreme simplicity. Anybody? Anybody? Anything else? Anything else? Nothing. What's that? A raindrop. Extreme simplicity. A what? Okay. You know what I do? We can do this for 3 days. And at the end of 3 days, you know what I'm going to say to you? Guess what this is? Guess what that is? Guess what that is? It's something. Whatever example you come up with is something. And you need to explain to me how you get something from nothing. There is no example. But let's let them talk. Maybe I'm cutting them a little short.
So, getting something from nothing, Charles Darwin gives us all confidence. Charles Darwin showed that what must have seemed the most difficult problem of getting something from nothing was soluble. He solved it, and his successors have been simply fleshing out his explanation ever since. But after Darwin, it's no longer possible for anybody, any reasonable person, to say, oh, I simply can't believe you could get something so complicated as that.
So here we go. Break it down. Darwin showed how it's possible to get something from nothing. How? He had nothing to do with getting something from nothing. Not a single thing, okay? And then he said this, you're not reasonable if you don't believe that you can get something from nothing. Now this is where, guys, I just have to step this up right here. Do you know it's not reasonable for you to come out here and tell me that it started from extreme simplicity, but for me to ask you what that extreme simplicity was? No, you can't do that. You're not being reasonable. What's not reasonable is you telling me that it came from nothing, but then you just said it came from extreme simplicity, which is something. Why don't I have the right, why don't I have the responsibility to ask you what that extreme simplicity was? We need to teach a generation to ask good questions, not disrespectful, not mocking, not ridiculing, but good, solid questions. You said it came from extreme simplicity, which is something. But you sold me a book that said a universe from nothing. What am I missing here? Wait for it.
But I think you're not being fair to Darwin. I think in a sense it's something from nothing. I mean, completely nothing. In the sense that every time a new... Take humans. We weren't around. Perhaps more than maybe 5 to 10 million years ago. And so, in a sense, every time a new species is created, it's something from nothing.
This is where I'll get a volunteer in the classes. I had a young man. I'll tell you, it's a true story. It just happened a month and a half ago. Statesville, North Carolina. I'm getting frustrated because it was frozen statues. The kids were frozen statues. And I'm like, guys, these kids don't get it. Don't get it. It was the second of 13 talks. It was a spiritual emphasis week. So I finally said, okay, that's it. I need a volunteer. Volunteer comes down. Okay, what's your name? Jacob, Carl. Nice to meet you. What grade are you? Senior. You going to college this year? Next year? Yes, I am. Good. Welcome to my biology class. I'm your professor. You ready? Yeah. Bang. I just started banging him. Why would a loving God allow death and suffering? What about carbon dating? What about continental drift? What about life from the further star? What about aliens? What about, you see what I'm saying? Bing, 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 bing. How are you going to deal with that, Jacob? Jacob, hello. You're a Christian, right? Yeah. How do you deal with those things? Oh, well, the Bible. Oh, no, Jacob, do not bring that old, outdated book into my classroom. It is full of the mistakes and errors. Not going to put up with that. What are you going to do, Jacob? I don't have a clue. I look at the whole school, like, guys, I'm not trying to be disrespectful here, but this is what I'm getting. I call kids down for this. What don't you understand? 5 to 10 million years ago, there were no humans. Now there's humans. That's a perfect example of how you get something from nothing. What's wrong with you? Why can't you understand this, you stupid Christian kids? I do this to them because this is what they're going to hear. You know how, I've done this talk for about a year and a half now. Do you know how many young people that I've called up that have been able to give a decent answer to this? There were no humans, now there's humans. What can't you understand that proves that you can get something from nothing? Do Do you know how many young people I've had, high school and college age, that have been able to give a solid answer to that in over a year and a half of doing this talk? Take a guess. Three. And I'm not trying to be mean to you guys. You're not being fair to Darwin. It's something from nothing, completely nothing. Every time a new species is created, it's something from nothing. How are you going to deal with that? You know how I deal with it? I let Richard Dawkins talk for me. He uses my arguments. He just uses bigger words. Take a listen.
Well, it's not from nothing, because it's from an antecedent species, and even the evolutionary process, the process that Darwin discovered, didn't start from nothing. It had to start from, well, a reasonably complicated chemical beginning, which was the first self-replicating molecule. That was selection can't get going until you have genetics, and so you've got to have genetics. And that's not a trivial problem, and it's a problem that actually hasn't yet been solved.
Well, it's not from nothing, because it's from an antecedent species. See, I wouldn't use antecedent, okay? I would just say, look, according to the theory of evolution, you have humans, you have apes. And those two have a common ancestor. From that common ancestor, some gradually had mutations to become more ape-like to get the apes. Some gradually had more mutation to become human and became human. And that's why, by the way, please don't use the argument, if you believe that we evolved from monkeys, how come we still got monkeys? Because evolution no longer teaches that we evolved from monkeys. It teaches that monkeys and humans came from a common ancestor, antecedent species. We need to understand their system better than they do. Because when you turn it back on them, well, an antecedent species, that's not nothing, because nothing is the absence of something, right? That's what Dr. Michio Kaku taught me. An antecedent species is therefore something. So this is not an example of getting something from nothing. Every time you get a new species, it's coming from something. It had to start from, well, a reasonably complicated chemical beginning. Did you just notice a big shift here? We went from extreme simplicity to a reasonably complicated chemical beginning. That's a big shift, guys. And then he said this: you can't get going until you have genetics. By the way, in order to have genetics, you have to have something. You're not going to get genetics without something. And it started from a self-replicating molecule. There you go. There's an example of extreme simplicity right there. A self-replicating molecule. You're joking, right? If it's an example of something that's very simple, then why can't we make one with all of our intelligence? Oh, but we can. I had a guy challenge me. We can. So I went and I looked it up. Sure enough, I found the example. Short, sharp science. Biologists create self-replicating RNA molecules. So there you go, Carl. We can now prove that something can come from nothing because we've created a self-replicating RNA molecule. Hello? Guys, just read the headline. What does the headline say? Does this say something came from nothing? Biologist, that's somebody, that's something, create. So that's supposed to prove that something can come from nothing because you had an intelligence that created something? And by the way, it gets even worse. I tell everybody, do not just read headlines, because if you do, you're going to get duped. You need to read the actual article, then you need to go read the sources that they cite. Because when you read the article, it doesn't support the headline. Watch. It doesn't have a very sexy name, but TC19Z synthesized in a lab in Cambridge. Could be. That's interesting. The headline is statement of fact. The article is, could be. Oh, it gets even better. Crucially, TC19Z can copy pieces of RNA that are almost half as long, 48% as itself. If an RNA enzyme is to copy itself, it has to be able to copy sequences as long as itself, and TC19Z is closing in on that goal. Have they created a self-replicating molecule? No. It can only do 48% of itself. As I'm reading the comments below the article, one that just jumped out at me. Non-Christian wrote this response. It's worth taking a look at. Is this article accurately titled Biologists Create Self-Replicating RNA Molecule, when in the penultimate paragraph, I had to look that word up. I'm not going to lie to you. Second to last. That's what it means. I'm told it can only replicate half its length. Isn't that a bit like saying mechanic builds self-assembling car in Australia and then finding only half of it's being built when I get there? I could have saved my ticket money from when it could fully build. I was really annoyed. Why did I have to almost finish the article before I knew the title was wrong? How can I trust your titles ever again, New Scientist? You can't. Because you got to understand, the people that write the titles are not the people that write the articles. They write the titles in such a way to get you and I to do the clickbait thing. Oh, you know, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson is dead. What? Ooh. It's like goofy stuff, man. We click on that. Oh. Carl, that's old. That's 2011. Okay. Let's go to the latest. I found a new article, 2015. New theoretical model explains the origins of self-replicating molecules. There you go, Carl. Finally figured it out. Read the article. We wouldn't be here today if molecules had not made that fateful transition to self-replication. Yet, despite the fact that biochemists have spent decades searching for the specific chemical process that can explain how simple molecule... Simple? Do you know how complex a molecule is? It is not simple. But anyway, I'll concede the point. Could make this leap. We still don't really understand how it happened. If you read the headline, you think they got this thing wired, man. They don't have a clue. You know this one headline I did like, or one title? Imagination. Why we spend so much time exploring realities that don't exist. Do you know why? Because if you want to explain how you can get something from nothing, you're going to need a lot of imagination. I say this again, but starting from extreme simplicity, if a self-replicating molecule is so simple, why can't we make one? Because it's not simple. Next.
Well, in fact, actually, that's kind of interesting, because it's true that many people think that evolution has to do with the origin of life, but it's really the origin of the diversity of life.
This is big. This is big. Evolution doesn't deal with the origin of life. Why not? Because when you try to, you look really bad. If you get a chance, parents, I tell you, find this documentary. It's got to be cheap. It's got to be, you know, like in closeout bins or something, you know. Expelled. It's a few years old now, but Ben Stein did us a favor. Ben Stein went to the nasty guys, the lead nasty guys, and asked them point blank questions and let them answer for themselves. Michael Ruse, University of Florida, nasty guy, loves to get the Christian kids in his class and he chews them up and spits them out. But he can't do it to Ben Stein. Watch this. He's asked, how do you get life from non-life? Fair question.
How did we get from an inorganic world to the world of the cell?
Well, one popular theory is that it might have started off on the backs of crystals.
Okay, hold up. How did we get life from non-life? It started off on the backs of crystals. Anybody want to ask a question? Where'd the crystals come from? where'd the molecule come from, right? Anyway, let me give it to you. Explain how you get life from non-life.
Molecules piggybacked on the back of crystals forming, and that this led to more and more complex. But of course, the nice thing about crystals is every now and then you get mistakes, mutations, and that this opens the way for natural selection.
You see how easy it is? All you got to do is get yourself a crystal, and then that molecule's on that crystal. And when that crystal has a deformation, it causes the molecule to mutate, and that's how you get life from non-life. What? I'm supposed to give up on the Lord Jesus Christ because you got a rock and a molecule? Forget about it. But it gets better. Don't question.
But at one point there was not a living thing.
Yeah.
And then there was a living thing. How did that happen?
Well, that's just I've just told you.
You're laughing? Do you think the Christian kids in his class laugh? Oh, he chews them up and spits them out. But you know what I see when I see this? I see Barney Fife. Right. Now, here's one of the greatest problems I think we have in our world today. We have a generation that doesn't know who Barney Fife is. I'm like, what? I'm speaking in a camp, you know, these high school kids. Barney Fife, who's Barney Fife? What? You don't know who Barney Fife is? That's child abuse. I'm just saying, man. Barney Fife, I'm bringing him back, okay? Anybody not know who Barney Fife is? Oh my goodness. I am brokenhearted. Andy Griffith, small town police officer. Barney Fife is the deputy who is, he knows everything, but he doesn't really know everything. Okay, let's put it like that. And he's always talking really big. I kind of put it like he's got the bulldog bark, but he's got a chihuahua behind. Okay, he's just kind of like a big mouth, right? But I love him. The guy was just great. So let me set this clip up. They finally get some real criminals in jail in Mayberry, right? Real criminals. I mean, most of the time, it's the guy that comes in, he's been drinking on Friday night, he lets himself in, he lets himself out the next day. That's like the only criminal they get. But they got a real criminal. So Barney is going to lay down the law. It's good.
Now, men, there are a few things we ought to get straightened out right at the start to avoid any grief later on. Now, here at the Rock, we have two basic rules. Memorize them so that you can say them in your sleep. The first rule is, obey all rules. Secondly, do not write on the wall, as it takes a lot of work to erase writing off of the wall.
That's Michael Ruse. Gonna talk a big game and got nothing to back it up, okay? And by the way, Gomer. We gotta bring Gomer back too. Gomer was awesome. But look at Gomer. Gomer's like, whoa, Barney, you go, man. Don't be a Gomer. Don't be intimidated by this. Just ask critical questions. Watch. It doesn't even have to be a deep theological question.
I don't see any reason why you shouldn't go from very simple to more and more complex to more and more complex.
I don't either. I don't either, but I don't know how you get from mud to a living cell. That's my question.
Yes, well, I've told you.
I think it's on the back.
Try one more time.
On the backs of crystals.
On the backs of crystals is at least one hypothesis, yes.
So that's your theory, and you think that is more likely and less far-fetched than intelligent design?
I think it is.
We do not have a science evidence problem. We have a worldview problem. We have a spiritual problem. Guys, take a look.
Yes. In fact, the famous final paragraph of his book, it basically tries to state that.
Yes. You have to start from a genetics, and that's one of the big gaps in our knowledge at the moment. Nobody knows how that started. The laws of chemistry somehow had to give rise to a self-replicating molecule. Once you've got that, at least a sufficiently accurately self-replicating molecule, then evolution takes off.
So simple. All you got to do is get yourself some genetics. And then when you get your genetics, the laws of chemistry take over and they give rise to a self-replicating molecule. Okay. Let me make this simple. The laws of chemistry gave rise to a self-replicating molecule. How does that happen? How does that work? Here's my simple illustration. These are just a few of the law books containing the laws in California. Do you guys have laws here in Ohio? You do? Okay. You have a lot of laws? Okay. A few, right? A lot. Got a lot. Okay. You got like libraries of laws, right? So here's a simple question. Just for Ohio. Don't go big. Just let's keep it here in Ohio. How many jails and penitentiaries did the laws of Ohio create? Just here in Ohio, how many jails, penitentiaries did those laws create? Just Ohio. More than 50? Less than 50? Less? Okay, nobody's playing along here. Did you go to sleep? More than 50? Less than 50? Okay, less. More than 10? Less than 10? What's the number? Zero. Laws don't create. See, they're going to throw this at you. The laws of quantum mechanics did this, and laws of physics. Laws don't do anything. Laws describe. Don't trust me. Non-Christian here. He says this. Laws are descriptions, often mathematical descriptions of natural phenomena. For example, Newton's law of gravity or Mendel's law of independent assortment. These laws simply describe the observation, not how or why they work. They don't create anything. So whenever you hear these guys, the laws of this did that, the laws of this did that, the laws don't do anything. They describe.
And what we've learned is remarkably this question, which is, in the sense of cosmology, in my mind, the last bastion of those people who feel there must be a creator, is the fact that it is plausible, based on everything we now know, that a universe could come from nothing. Now, that doesn't mean it did come from nothing any more than Darwin's argument implied that life absolutely originated by chemistry. We don't know that yet. Similarly, we can't prove that the universe arose from nothing, but the discoveries in physics and cosmology have led us to realize that it's increasingly plausible, and I find that remarkable and worth celebrating.
$35 for the book, $100 for the ticket, whatever we had to go through to get ourselves there, to hear how you get something from nothing. And in the opening statement, the one guy says, well, it didn't come from not quite nothing. It came from not quite nothing, extreme simplicity. And then the guy who writes the book says, what? It's plausible that a universe can come from nothing. Anybody want to define plausible for me? I looked it up. Plausible. All right, simple definition is possibly true. If something is possibly true, then it is also possibly false. So I'm supposed to give up on the Lord Jesus Christ because you got something that might be true? It gets worse because he goes on, he says, superficially fair, reasonable, or valuable, but often specious. Oh, does anybody know what the word specious means? I do because I looked it up because I was reading a Bible verse. 2 Corinthians 11:3 says this, but I fear lest by any means the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety. And I looked up that word subtlety because it was kind of an interesting word. And when you look it up, that word subtlety means a specious or false knowledge. I didn't know what specious meant, so I looked it up, and specious is something that looks good but isn't. Welcome to our world today, where things, man, looking at the messenger, making things look good, but they are not good. Oh, but he's nice, he's polite. Drink the poison. That doesn't mean that it did come from nothing. What? Any more than Darwin's argument implied that life absolutely originated by chemistry? We don't know that yet. Then why is it being jammed down every kid's school that goes to a government school? It's being jammed down their throat as a fact. And if you question it, you're an idiot, you're this, you're that. And many compromising Christian schools, because science has proven, no, they haven't. Science can't prove that. Similarly, we can't prove that the universe arose from nothing. What? We spend all that money to go hear how you get something from nothing, and then within the first 10 minutes, both of them tell us that they can't prove it or they don't know. There's another hour and 50 minutes if you want to go watch it. I'm not. I did, but I'm not going to do it to you guys. I would encourage you to go watch it, because what you're going to find is Romans 1:22. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. But virtual particles, Carl, you brought up virtual particles, and we hear about virtual particles, they just pop into and out of existence from nothing. That proves you can get something from nothing. Not so fast. I went and I found an expert, leading expert, virtual particles, is this guy right here, Matt Strassler. He wrote an article about virtual particles. I could even understand it, and it says this, the term virtual particle is an endlessly confusing and confused subject for the layperson, and even for the non-expert scientist. The best way to approach this concept, I believe, is to forget you ever saw the word particle in the term. A virtual particle is not a particle at all. What is it? It refers precisely to a disturbance in a field that is not a particle. What? A particle is a nice regular ripple in a field, one that can travel smoothly and effortlessly through space like a clear tone of a bell moving through the air. Here's what a virtual particle is. A virtual particle generally is a disturbance in a field that will never be found on its own. Is a virtual particle that just comes from nothing then? Pops into existence from nothing? If it'll never be found on its own, it can't be. It's something else is there. And he says this, but instead is something that is caused by the presence of other particles, often of other fields. So he drew a picture that even this feeble mind could understand. You've got two electrons, okay? When these electrons are far enough apart, you don't see anything. When they get within a certain proximity of each other, there's a ripple that goes out. The ripple is the virtual particle. Then when the electrons keep moving, virtual particle disappears. So does this prove that something can come from nothing? Virtual particles are just jumping into existence from nothing. No, they are not. He's the leading expert on virtual particles, okay? Now, why do I do that? Because I want you to listen to Stephen Colbert. Yes, I know. He's gotten grumpy and nasty in his old age, but he did a show before he did what he does now, and he literally had Lawrence Krauss on the program to sell Lawrence Krauss's book. It is classic. And I think Christians can learn from this. Asking good questions is really a good tool. Watch.
Welcome back, everybody. My guest tonight is a cosmologist whose new book is about why there is something instead of nothing. I'm guessing because his publisher gave him a deadline. Please welcome Lawrence Krauss. Coming on. All right, sir, let's get the CV out here, because it is not unimpressive.
Thank
you. Okay, you are a cosmologist.
That's not a cosmetologist.
Not a cosmetologist. Okay, because I was going to ask you for a mani-pedi. Okay. A theoretical physicist, you're the director of Origins Project at Arizona State University. The new book is called A Universe from Nothing, Why There Is Something Rather Than Nothing. A book about the ultimate question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, doctor. Sweep away thousands of years of mystery and awe at creation that let the greatest minds in civilizations all over the world to lead to one point, a single divine loving creator. Destroy it. Why is there something instead of nothing?
It's really easy, because nothing's unstable. And in fact, there's no evidence for any deity. Everything we know about the laws of physics, which are remarkable, and have changed everything about the way we think about the universe, what nothing is and what something is. This table here is mostly empty space.
This table cost me $500.
Well,
you tell me I got ripped off? Well, no, wait, let's go back a second, okay? Nothing is unstable. What do you mean that nothing is unstable? Nothingness is nothingness.
Well, the physics has changed what we mean by nothing. In fact, nothing is an empty space, is a boiling, bubbling brew of virtual particles popping in and out of existence.
Wait,
so
no,
fast,
that's not nothing. That's something. Why are those virtual particles there?
Because of the laws of quantum mechanics. And they tell us that even though you can try and count and see what's in there in empty space, you'll see nothing. But in fact, one of the biggest mysteries, and the reason I wrote the book, one of the greatest discoveries of the last 50 years is that, in fact, empty space weighs something.
Empty space weighs something.
In fact, it's the dominant stuff in the universe. Nothing.
So I am never going to lose those last 5 pounds.
Never. And in fact, it's worse, because in fact, unlike normal stuff, you may have learned in high school that gravity sucks, but in fact, it doesn't. With empty space, it's repulsive. And that empty space is forcing the universe to expand ever faster. Faster and faster.
So the nothingness is forcing us apart.
It's forcing us apart. Well, we're not going to be forced apart, but the galaxies are.
Okay, you say you haven't been rubbing any of that baby shampoo on your head, have you? With the THC in it?
Well,
no?
No comment.
You're clean?
Yeah.
Leave me a hair sample. We'll check it later. All right. So, okay, you say there are three different types of nothing.
That's right.
What, I mean, what are the three? I didn't know there was such a variety. A sampler platter of
I would have thought
nothing.
You'd be an expert on it. But
on
in any
nothingness?
Case, yeah.
Yes.
In any case, there are three different kinds of nothing. First, empty space, which I'd say is probably the nothing of the Bible, an eternal, dark, empty void.
Do you mean like a true heart vacuum?
Exactly.
That would be, that's nothing that you're talking about?
Most people would have thought that would be nothing.
That's what I think nothing is.
And then I
also
tell you that,
Baltimore.
But then if I tell you that that kind of nothing actually is unstable, if you wait long enough, that kind of nothing will always produce particles.
By saying that it will...
If you wait long enough, the laws of quantum mechanics tell us that particles will burp out of empty space and eventually fill up a universe. It's really remarkable.
Is it that, to me, that sounds like the empty space may be empty to us, but it is some sort of sheath or membrane between us and some other reality.
No, there's nothing. Well, there's absolutely nothing there until there's something.
What's the second type of nothing?
Okay, well, then if you don't buy that, then I could say, well, you might say, well, that's not nothing because there's space.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out if you apply quantum mechanics to gravity, then in fact space itself becomes dynamical, and universes, spaces themselves, and time can pop into existence where there was none before.
So in some theoretical end space, before the moment
Sounds
of creation,
mm-hmm.
there can be no time and no space and no energy?
And no energy. Zero
and then
energy.
Suddenly, from nowhere and from nothing, comes something and somewhere.
And all sorts of stuff, and it sounds like the ultimate free lunch, and
yes,
it is.
It is.
It is, and it really, and what's remarkable is it's possible without any supernatural shenanigans. And
listen, stop with that.
Why?
Why is what you're doing, whatever this is, because obviously, because I am not in the priesthood, I can't understand the scrawls on the blackboards you people down at, where are you?
Well, that's why I wrote the book, so you could.
Where are you? Arizona State.
Arizona State.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
you priests of theoretical physics, mm-hmm. you can explain to each other what you mean with your language of math, and I have to take that on faith.
No, in fact, you should be skeptical.
I am.
And in fact, you should, I know. And that's why you should. Why I tried to write the arguments in the book.
But I will never read it. So you should buy it.
Buying it is important.
Buying is good.
Yeah,
okay, but why does what you're saying have to be an attack on my God?
It doesn't have to be an attack.
But that's all you've done. You've attacked my God for the last 6 minutes.
No, you have. All I've said is you don't need him.
That's an attack.
No.
Of course, we are here to love
the universe as we understand it. We've changed our minds about the universe. We've learned that the universe is more remarkable than anything we ever thought before. And in fact, changing your mind and in fact being wrong is wonderful. You should try it sometime. It's really amazing. It means that the fact that the universe is more remarkable than the fairy tales that were talked about by Bronze Age literate peasants before we knew the Earth orbited the sun.
You're not attacking at all, but go ahead.
No, but I mean,
you believe there's no God.
I don't even use the word believe. The point is
there is no God.
There's no need for God.
Is there God? Is there God? What would you say?
There's no evidence for God.
Okay.
There's no evidence for God.
So let me ask something. If there is no God, mm-hmm. okay, if there is no thing called God, if he is nothing, can't something come from him? Lawrence Krauss, the universe from God. We'll be right back.
We don't have to be jerks. Good, solid questions. And now, why would I show that? I want this generation to know what they're walking away from, but even what they're walking to. Guys, you want me to give up on the Lord Jesus Christ because you got nothing? 1 Corinthians 1:27, God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. There has to be evidence, right? I mean, come on. These guys aren't going to say that the universe came from nothing without evidence, right? The universe could be spontaneously created out of nothing. So what's the evidence to support your position, Dr. Villinken?
Of course, if you ask, is there evidence that the universe began by this spontaneous nucleation out of nothing, I don't think we can produce any evidence for that.
What was Dr. Krauss's thing? There's no evidence for God. There's no evidence for God. So what evidence is there to support that your position is correct, that something came from nothing? And if there's no evidence, guess what they have? Faith. And you want a blind faith? That is a blind faith. Biblical faith is not a blind faith. God said he did this. When I take what he said that he did and I go to the world that I live in, what I see in the world, is it consistent with what he said, or is it consistent with in the beginning nothing? That's a decision that each and every individual has to make. But hang on to this. Science without physical evidence is opinion. They can jam their opinion down everybody's throat as much as they want, but I'm going to call it what it is. It's opinion. And when you start with the Word of God, I'm telling you that the evidence that we see in the world, guys, you are this close to Cincinnati Museum of Natural History. You are this close to Cincinnati Zoo. This should absolutely be a ministry where some of you young folks, You're leading tours through the zoo. You're leading tours through the museum. I will train you. I'm here local. I will train you to lead a tour through there. I am very happy to train you to do that. I've been doing it for years. I'm trying to do this mentor discipleship thing now because I'm on the downhill slide. I'm not going to lie to you. 59. I know I got maybe 5 more years that I can travel at the pace that I've been traveling. Things are catching up, okay? So my goal in life now is, who are the young bucks that want to get up and run with the ball? I'm ready to hand it off. Cincinnati Zoo, Cincinnati Museum are custom made for us. They are custom made for us, man. Now the new one, I don't know about the new museum because I haven't been able to get past the dinosaur exhibit anymore because it was all under construction. So I don't know what the new one's going to be like. But I know that up through the dinosaurs, you can lead a great tour just through the dinosaur section to begin with. And I am here. I am happy to do it. During the middle of a week, you want to go down there? Let's go. But one thing you can't do is run and hide from this stuff. We have nothing to run and hide from. If you're going to give up on the Lord Jesus Christ, know what you're going to. It's not good.